You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hello, Bill.
Good morning, Matt. Welcome back.
I need a vacation, man.
So when you were gone, you were not on vacation.
Well, first of all, did we hang out on two different occasions during the interim where I was gone?
Yeah, you clearly lost all moorings of time and space. You don't even know when we talk anymore.
But one time we hung out together in New York City. We went out to dinner with David Petrugia, and then we went out for drinks. I drank. And then I saw you. Then we hung out at the airport, at Reagan National Airport. Were those both during the interim when I was off?
I'm not sure if New York was during your break. But last week, I was in D.C. for a few days. I was called in to do MSNBC for a whopping 5 minutes to talk about the White House Correspondents' Dinner. But it was an excuse to come down and talk to some other folks.
Let's be honest about last week too. I was available early in the week, and you couldn't.
Right.
And then I did go. I gave a speech in Orlando, and took the kids to Disney. So on Saturday, that was quite an experience. Still.
Every time someone in my kids' school goes to Disney, I get weeks and weeks of, when are we going to Disney? And I was like, well, you know. That could cost a little bit of money. Might have to save up for that.
You gotta like plan this thing like the D-Day invasion too. Right. I mean, you know, you gotta buy the tickets in advance. And we did the thing where you pay extra money so you don't have to stand in line with the normies. although we did stand in line because we got like four rides and you have to schedule them. You have like a time slot. You know, between 10:15 and 11, you have to be on the Seven Dwarfs, whatever. And then we did a couple other rides that we actually had to stand in line for. But then, you know, you got to get, it takes like an hour to get into the park, basically. It's a whole process. So
I imagine I'll have to suck this up eventually, but I'm completely frightened by it.
And the weird thing is, like, you know, I thought that what they would like the most was the rides, but it turns out, like, at one point, Mickey and Minnie come out of Magic Kingdom and, like, Elsa or whatever from Frozen, and it sings that song. That was their favorite part, having these fake, you know, mascots lip syncing to music was what really did it for them. That was by far their favorite part. And they also did, there was a lunch that they went to that probably cost us $150, give or take, that my wife took them to, where they had lunch with Mickey and Minnie and Donald and all that.
So, no Hall of Presidents?
No, but I took them to a Nationals game the other week, and George Washington won the race. They have the presidents, the mascots race. So I'm father of the year, let's be honest. So I don't know. It just wasn't working out. Thank you to Kevin Glass and John Hawkins, who I did listen to them in their entirety. Good podcast, good shows. But I'm happy. Well, I'm actually not happy to be back in the mix because we were talking before, Bill. a couple things. So, like, one, do you remember? It wasn't that long ago. I thought Trump seems like he's doing pretty good.
You said he was Reaganing.
I don't know if I went that far.
Let's pull the tape. can Blogging Head Central splice in?
Okay, I'll concede it's possible that I might have.
You're on a Gorsuch high.
Things were looking.
Is it still worth it for Gorsuch?
Yeah, probably, but we need another couple retirements here.
Well, so I wrote a piece on Monday for Real Clear Politics saying Trump isn't accomplishing anything and his voters don't care. People on the left keep waiting for the moment when his base wakes up and realizes that they've been conned. And
how much of that was based on our conversations that you had gleaned that from me?
That informed me, absolutely. Okay. But you had some sort of concrete examples. You know, Trump signs this executive order on religious liberty, which the ACLU says, we're going to sue over this, but there's nothing here, so there's no point even suing. But Franklin Graham still comes and says, wow, finally a president who understands Jesus Christ. You have stuff like that. You know, he doesn't get money for the wall. He does a big rally.
He's not going to move the capital of Israel.
Did he say that today?
To Jerusalem. Apparently, it's being reported it's going to stay in Tel Aviv. So, I mean, it's just one more broken promise.
Right. I mean, it's harder for this guy to pull out of the Paris deal.
Not the capital, but our diplomatic relations or our embassy or whatever. I hope that by now my lack of precision gets is granted with grace. We need a name for these people, like the deadheads, right? Like, and by the way, let me just say while I'm riffing here, I'm beginning to think the DMZ wasn't the best name for this. You know what I'm saying? Like, our idea was the demilitarized zone, but it turns out the DMZ is pretty dangerous. It's more complicated than any of us knew at the time we named this.
Well, anyway, my point was, man, I wrote this before the Comey stuff, that all Trump's doing all these things that are where there's no real follow through. He's not actually delivering on his promises. There isn't any discernible benefits that his base is getting. And yet there's no evidence that there's any loss in support because of it. Now, with Comey, you certainly see some elected Republicans unnerved. You obviously are unnerved. But is there any reason to think that this is different? That this is, the point of my Real Clear Politics piece was, what animates his base is what they're in opposition to. And this is something that Rush Limbaugh said back in January 2016, that the glue of quote-unquote conservatives is not conservatism. It's opposition to Democrats and Obama and liberal elites and all that stuff. So as long as Trump is fighting them, that's enough. It's fun to see Trump get under their skin and feel like you're winning some sort of mystic cultural battle. Actual policy wins are not as important.
So that's one way of looking at it, and I think there's some truth to that. But I think you could also make a legitimate case, which is to say that stopping bad things from happening is an accomplishment as much as passing positive legislation.
I mean, it's maybe a couple ticks more substantive than just pure hatred, but not a lot.
I mean,
you could have nominated other Republicans to accomplish that goal and not get all of the other baggage that you get with Trump.
Well, speaking of the baggage, I mean, it's not just the firing of Comey, but it's the tweet this morning. We're sacking Senator Blumenthal, which is just abnormal. I mean, where he's attacking him. There's just something so unsettling about it. Let me ask you.
So the manometer is down to Harding or Nixon at this point. Which how far do we drop?
I think obviously Nixon's the analogy right now. I want to ask you this though. I've had this is the worst kind of story for me to cover. I'm doing such horrible counter programming. Yesterday I had the FCC chairman Ajit Pai on my podcast to talk about net neutrality, and I wrote a piece in the Daily Beast today about airlines and all the problems airlines are having. Like, neither of those things are going to get probably any attention now because of the feeding frenzy about Comey. And of course, I have zero competitive advantage to talk about it. So it's a tough sort of news cycle for someone who's hustling.
Aren't you part of the cover up? You're trying to distract us from Comey. You want us to talk about airline passenger scuffles.
I'm trying to change the subject to passenger scuffles. It's not working. And neither is net neutrality, by the way. So, but I do have only one somewhat small, it's a small but somewhat original thought, I think, on this, which is, okay, let me dig this. So in the past week or so, Hillary Clinton publicly said that James Comey cost her the election. And then Comey testified before Congress and gave false testimony about Huma Abedin.
Which, I mean, I assume that was a mistake, and because it was corrected, correct?
The FBI corrected it, yeah. I believe. Because I don't want to have to make a mistake and have the blogging head suits correct me. But in any event, those two things happened, right? Hillary Clinton blamed Comey, and Comey gave false testimony to Congress. So what if Trump, instead of firing him out of the blue and blaming it on something that happened like in June or something, word had leaked out that there was like a trial balloon floated, that President Trump was very unhappy with his testimony. He feels that Comey's become too much a part of the story. He's made himself, he's trying to be a hero. He's trying to be famous. And President Trump feels that this false testimony he gave about Huma Abedin was a straw that broke the camel's back, that he's losing the integrity, he's jeopardizing the integrity of the FBI. Like, what if like that had leaked out for a day or two before they fired him? Would the media and the backlash have been as strong?
Yes.
Okay, so you don't think that would have mitigated?
I mean, there's just no getting around that the driver of this is that there's a live investigation into the Trump campaign, the Trump White House's ties to Russia.
But he is imminently fireable. I mean, like, there's not an absurd argument to say that James Comey has repeatedly botched things and made, it's not absurd to fire him, but it does look awfully suspicious.
If he made a move to fire him on January 21st, that would probably not have anything that he did before Comey gave testimony to say there is an investigation going on.
Right, but there was just a huge Washington Post story about how Comey gave this false testimony. There were a lot of liberals calling for him to be fired. Like, you don't think that could have served as a legitimate pretext? It's like, look, we've given this guy so many chances. This guy, like, keeps botching things. He keeps making himself the story. He's besmirching the reputation of this institution.
Once it is clear that the FBI is investigating the Trump campaign, the Trump White House, anything Trump does to determine who is in charge of that is going to be viewed as a Nixonian act to protect himself. I mean, there's no way you can separate those things. If you want your own guy in there to insulate yourself from that sort of investigation, you got to do it immediately before it becomes clear that there's an investigation going on. But that assumes a level of foresight and intelligence from this president, which I don't think really exists. I mean, they seem to genuinely have believed that Democrats were going to applaud this action. And that, the Times reported, Trump called up Chuck Schumer to give him a heads up. And Chuck Schumer says, "You're making a big mistake." And that Trump was taken aback. They just don't seem to get it. They have not gotten it for a long time and have gotten away with it. So I understand that they've had every bad impulse of theirs validated by society for a long time. And to go back to my original point, I don't necessarily presume that his base will abandon him over this. And if his base does not abandon him, I don't expect congressional Republicans to bore on him now.
Well, the other thing about the trial balloon is they could have either gotten people on the record saying Comey, more people on the record saying Comey should go, which would have given them cover, or they would have gotten the feedback that says, don't do this because it's going to be a huge disaster if you do it.
I mean, they're
instead, just... I mean, this thing happened very out of the blue. I mean, obviously, Comey, according to reports, was like speaking in California and thought it was a prank. the TV was saying he was fired.
I mean, there are many things strange about this White House, so you have to be careful how you don't want to sound too you don't want to use too many superlatives. But Trump is hesitating pulling out of the Paris deal. Trump is hesitating pulling out of NAFTA. Trump is hesitating undermining the Iran deal. You know, in all these cases, there are people in the White House who say, and people outside the White House that say to them, don't do NAFTA. You know, the Secretary of Agriculture was there for less than a week, already had a full presentation on, here are all of the voters who rely on NAFTA, all the farmers that voted for you, don't screw these guys. Apparently Al Gore is on the phone with Trump saying, don't pull out of Paris, and he's listening, and he's hesitating from doing it. And clearly people in the in his military operation saying, yeah, you know, don't go in a hard on Iran. Just that's not, you know, that deals is not causing a problem right now. There doesn't seem to be somebody like that when it comes to this investigation, and perhaps some other matters. It's weird how his inner circle is constructed, that no one can figure out, hey, this might give you some political backlash, except for the fact that, and this is the only conclusion I can draw, the chance of him actually going down is so real that the risk of keeping him is bigger than the risk of firing him.
Well, wouldn't that person be Jeff Sessions? Like, maybe that's the problem, that you have in other spheres of governance, you have Trump being tempered by, you know, people who have a different worldview. But his attorney general is Jeff Sessions,
who of course had to recuse himself because he's
and yet he had some sort of fingerprints on this, right? I mean, right, he wasn't right. Completely out of the loop on this.
I mean, I mean, Kellyanne Conway, they just did this SNL sketch, where in the world is Kellyanne Conway? Now all of a sudden she's everywhere. I mean, they react so much to what's on TV, it's bizarre. But she seemed to be born for this moment. I assume as a child, she was like watching the Saturday Night Massacre as a toddler, saying, someday I can lie on TV, like Richard Nixon can lie on TV. So she's on with, I think it was Chris Cuomo this morning, and, you know, people are trying to get the TikTok, you know, who told the deputy AG to do this? And she's like, talk to him. I have no idea. Your job is to go on TV and explain what's going on in the White House, and now who knows where this report came from? It is not plausible that a career prosecutor got confirmed by the Senate and on the first day said, I'm going to go review whether James Comey should be at the FBI. That's going to be my first order of business. That does not make any sense.
My problem with this is this puts me like in such a weird spot. And look, we always knew, you know, there's a whole thing that Trump corrupts. I'm sure you're familiar with this meme, which is that basically, I mean, you look at all the people who like, who basically sucked up or like carried water for Trump, like Chris Christie's the classic example. They all end up worse off. And so like part of the problem is that Trump puts Republicans and conservatives in this really untenable position. Like on one hand, I think there are really obnoxious leftists who are overwrought with everything, and there really is a Trump derangement syndrome. On the other hand, Trump is not our guy. And so like it puts you in this weird position where like on one hand, if Marco Rubio or Scott Walker were president, these same people would be trying to impeach him right now. You know, like, so you can't really take their word that Trump is like that much of a norm-breaking president. On the other hand, Trump really is a bad hombre. And so it's a really weird position to be in. Like, basically, in a normal situation, you kind of know, like, if you're a conservative commentator, you're going to defend this team. If you're a liberal commentator, you're going to defend this team. But almost everything is ad hoc. Like, it's really depends on the day. I mean, you've seen me, the Madometer fluctuates wildly depending on when we talk.
So I know, you know, it's Wednesday morning. This is not even 24 hours old. I mean, you were a never Trump conservative in the election. You did not vote in the election. So you're not someone who can judge from the perspective of someone who did vote and support him. But would you say within Washington, is there a weakening of support for Trump amongst Republicans and conservatives? Does this actually have a demonstrable effect on his ability to, say, pass Obamacare repeal in the Senate? Are senators going to say, I am less interested in sticking my neck out for this guy because of all this is going on right now? And do you think there's any chance that the House would actually impeach?
It'd be very, very hard to get the Republican House to impeach. But I think Democrats will probably take the House, and then they probably will impeach him if he's still there. No, I think you're right. I think that there's Trump fatigue. It's just we're inundated with news and controversy. And I think the part you said about sticking your neck out for him is the key thing. Like nobody's going to do that anymore. I mean, there, you know, even just a few weeks ago when he seemed to have turned the corner, some good things seemed like they were happening. You know, call me, Pollyanna or whatever. But, we're stuck with him. So you can either hope for the best and hope he's going to straighten up or just be suicidal and pessimistic. I always hope for the best. But at some point, like, you just give up and you're just exhausted by this. And I think we're seeing it. I mean, if you look at the senators who are sort of, you know, speaking out, criticizing him, or at least raising questions about the Republican senators who are raising questions about this, it's a pretty expanding list. I mean, you know, Trump needs to get, so for example, to get a new FBI director, he needs 51 votes. Well, how many Republicans? I mean, I don't think he's going to be able to put Sheriff Clark or even Chris Christie in that position, right? I mean, like, he's going to have to pick somebody legit, I think, to get 51 Republicans
to
vote.
I'm loath to say Trump has to do X when there's so many times where he's not done what he has to do. It may be that he tries to appoint a Chris Christie or Rudy Giuliani or a Sheriff Clark and maybe three Republicans bolt and he doesn't get that nominee. But I don't know if Trump has the capacity, or at least I can't. I mean, look, there's sometimes he's done the seemingly rational thing, you know, getting rid of Flynn and appointing McMaster. And there's other times where he is not. So I just don't know what he's going to do there. He might have a fight over a clearly partisan AG and put Republicans on the spot.
Yeah. I would say this. Now, having voiced my concern, I did feel like a lot of the coverage of this was overwrought, and that there is this Trump derangement syndrome. And I feel like you can tell some of the ostensibly nonpartisan, straight reporting journalists who are really have a rooting interest in this thing. So can you hear that? Someone just texted me. Did you hear a little ping?
No, I did not hear that.
Oh, good. It's just my earphones.
Yeah.
Or I'm going crazy. Either way, Trump may have finally driven me over. So having sort of expressed my concern about what Trump is up to, I would say when you consider that there was cause to fire Comey and that there was recent examples of him messing things up, and the fact that we do not know who Trump is going to try to replace him with, it seemed like the Saturday Night Massacre part of it might be a bit premature, I would say.
Well, I mean, felt like it was premature in that it's not likely to be a precursor to actual impeachment or resignation the way the Saturday Night Massacre was. Look, we've had Bush derangement syndrome. We had Obama derangement syndrome. Now we have Trump derangement syndrome. There are definitely examples of wild conspiracy theories that go viral within the left interwebs. I thought it was very notable this week. The New York Times ran a fact check of healthcare bill claims from left-wing websites that were dubious. First time I've seen the Times spend time on, you know, seemingly no-name sites, but things that were getting, you know, some traction on the internet and shooting them down. I mean, this is the kind of, you know, self-policing that I think you don't see a whole lot of on the right. I mean, the New York Times is not part and parcel of the progressive movement, but clearly read by a lot of people on the left. And I would say
conservatives have done a pretty good job of calling out these scam packs.
Well, you have.
Right. Not just me.
But there are certainly things like, you know, certain talking points on the right, which I don't think there is a robust apparatus to say, hey, guys, don't use that one. That one's not quite right. I don't see that as much. But my point is that you do see corners of the left take bait and repeat things that are not true, unwittingly, I would argue. I don't think it's too deliberate. But that comes from a heightened sense of, you know, to use the loaded word, derangement.
Let me finish one point.
Between Bush, Obama, and Trump, Trump gives you the most legitimate reason to be deranged. I mean, he does things that are actively abhorrent and clearly indicative of extremely sordid things going on behind the curtain. So give folks a little slack in the difficulty in discerning, you know, what's actually horrible and what is overwrought. I mean, that's why we need good reporting to help us sift through that. But you can't blame folks for being a little being on a hair trigger because of all the things that are actually going on.
No, I mean, I'm trying really hard to put things in context and to see, like, is this really that unprecedented, or is this really analogous to that?
Fire Comey is pretty unprecedented. I mean, not literally unprecedented. You know, I mean, Bill Clinton fired William Sessions 6 months in after a six-month investigation with the reams of evidence of improprieties and ethical violations. And then appointed Louis Freeh, who totally screwed Clinton at the course of his administration. Right. So it was hardly a fix-his-in kind of deal.
But did the mainstream media, when Clinton sacked that FBI director, like, number one, you're probably the first person to mention that.
I saw it a couple places.
Well, I don't think it got a lot of mention on cable TV. And number two, was that greeted as, like, such, you know, with such hand-wringing as what we saw yesterday?
No, because there was an extremely thorough internal investigation of it. It wasn't 2 weeks with a bunch of literally cutting and pasting from Hillary Clinton's website to justify the deal. There's a real investigation that went on, and it was actual, you know, improprieties with finances and stuff like that. And Clinton was still kind of reluctant to do it, apparently, because, you know, of how it might look, and appointed somebody who wasn't considered a stooge. So
we don't know that about Trump. That's the part we don't know about Trump yet.
Fair enough. That person's going to have a lot to prove to show that he or she is not a stooge.
I agree. Look, here's what I think part of the deal is. Like, if you're a cable network or a political website and this happens, do you get ratings? Do you get clicks by saying, like, well, we'll wait and see how this shakes out? It's too premature to compare this to the Saturday Night Massacre. Like, you know, it seems unusual, but let's not freak out too much. Let's sort of stay calm and carry on. Like, that is not good TV, good clickbait, right? I mean, we all have perverse incentive to hype things even maybe more than they deserve.
I think there are a lot of examples of that. There's a lot of examples. I mean, have you know, breaking news alerts every 30 minutes is ridiculous. And,
we should have a breaking news crawl right here.
Right. There's all sorts of things that get treated as, you know, the end of the world. They're clearly not the end of the world. But, you know, firing the guy who's leading the investigation against you, I mean, that's bona fide, eye-popping, disturbing stuff. And if you don't react this way... What's that?
I'm joking. I said that's where we're going to have to agree to disagree.
Well, I mean, if there isn't a strong reaction, it's all the easier to appoint a stooge. I mean, there's some value in the reaction.
Right, but should people who are like ostensibly straight news journalists? I felt like there was a lot of on TV and on Twitter. A lot of ostensibly straight, nonpartisan, down the middle journalists who are weighing in on this as an affront to democracy and rule of law, I have to admit that bothers me.
We are way past the point of our news media being wholly sterile. And reporting the news. I mean, the time where everyone was just sort of ramrod straight, monotone voices, you know, just sharing what we were told from the White House today. Go, you assess it, analyze it yourself. I mean, that is not what the current media system is. So to suddenly institute such a style at this moment would seem highly inappropriate. I mean,
yeah, but I think it also, but I'm concerned about norms and about institutions, which is part of the reason I've always been concerned about Trump. But I feel like Trump, whether Trump is causing this or is a product of it, like this, what the media is doing is also contributing to the breakdown of norms and institutions.
I mean, you're talking about norms and institutions that are gone, that don't exist. You know, we live in a media environment that is more like 1800 with a lot. I mean, I'm not saying CNN is partisan press the way almost everything in the 1800 was partisan press.
I don't want to talk about CNN because I work there, but there's MSNBC, there's Fox, there's journalists on Twitter who work at, you know, networks who tweet things that they would never say on TV, and it gives you a sense of what they believe and where they're coming from.
We have a new standard, I think, unofficially, where people don't try to hide their perspectives. And they lay it out for people to see, and you can, as so long as you can see it, you can interpret their views accordingly. And I mean, even CNN, which gets to write as fake news, they go out of their way to have bona fide Trump supporters in almost every panel to make sure you hear what that vantage point is, no matter how ridiculous and factually bereft that it is. So no one can argue that they can't find all the perspectives that they want to find in the news. People might have a heightened sense of drama all the time. And there are examples where that might numb the senses. But I don't think this is one of those times. The sense of outrage that I think is not, I don't think is too top down. I think there's a lot of bottom up outrage here. That's outrage that, you know, the Senate needs to hear if there's any chance of confirming an FBI nominee who's not going to be an out and out lackey.
Yeah. I don't want to dwell too much on this because I think you're right that the horse is out of the barn or whatever the expression is. Is it the expression?
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
Shutting the barn door. I feel like we're losing some of our farm analogy. Like, make hay while the sun shines. I've said that before, and people are like, "What the hell are you talking about? Make it hay." I don't want to dwell on it too much, but I guess the last thing I would probably say about it is, it does lend credence when Trump says, "The lion, you know, media's out to get me," or these guys are, you know, they're all against me, the fake news. It does reinforce his point about an unfair, liberally biased media.
Well, I mean, this is a horse out of the barn situation. We are in that polarized moment we're in a moment where, you know, the Trump 40%, give or take, don't trust CNN, don't trust New York Times. No matter how well researched or reported the story is, they just aren't going to believe it. And if someone acts in an outraged way in those sorts of mediums, they will use that as rationale to dismiss things that they were going to dismiss anyway. I mean, that's the key point here. Like, we're already, the polarization's already occurred, the battle lines are already formed. Sure, that's not great as far as, you know, holding the Republic together, but we're already there. We're already having that difficulty in maintaining unity after the last several elections that have been, you know, largely decided along these cultural fault lines. So I don't think it's fair to ask the more mainstream outlets to stand down in hopes of repairing a breach that they're not really in a position to repair. They need to do their best to both get basic information out and in this decentralized world, not pretend that people don't have individual perspectives. Let that show so people can draw their own conclusions the best they can.
Well, at least people know that if they want to get, you know, serious, thoughtful information and commentary, that they could tune in to Blogging Heads TV and the DMZ.
That's what we're here for. Anything else you want to share before we call it a day?
Just check out my podcast with the FCC chairman about net neutrality. That seems like a DMZ-ish sort of topic, right?
I agree. Listen to John Oliver's FCC takedown first, I'd say, and then your interview.
Yeah. I mean, I probably should have included, I don't do a lot of production, so, you know, it's rare for us to play a clip, but I probably should have. But yeah, check it out. John Oliver likens him to a serial killer at one point. And I asked him about that. And my Daily Beast column today is about the unfriendly skies, and I try to be fair and balance my experience as a frequent flyer and customer, and my sense that, you know, seats are getting smaller and security is getting heightened and stewardesses are now flight attendants who could potentially have you arrested and your children sent to foster care. And I try to balance that. I try to balance that with being fair to the people who, the hardworking people who work for airlines and airports and the stress they're under and the challenges they face. Check that out.
Say anything about airline snacks? If the snacks were better, you know, people can be easily bought off. I know that guy's face is bloody, but finally, some good snacks.
Yeah,
that would solve a lot of problems.
I did not get into the snacks, but I think I talked to a couple people who gave me some insight about what it's like on the other side of, you know, on the other side of this when you're a flight attendant and you're dealing with drunken passengers and passengers who, something goes wrong and they're videotaping it immediately and Facebooking it and threatening people. And, you know, it's not, and keep in mind how cranky we get when we fly. Imagine if you had to fly and help provide security and be a waiter on a plane and do it all with a smile. Like, it's a tough gig, right? So, you know, there've been multiple incidents lately of melees breaking out at airports and on airplanes. And so,
you're just hustling into some sort of special frequent flyers club, aren't you? There's Matt Lewis. Well, he understands where we're coming from. Bump that guy up to first class.
Well, I don't know about that, but I do say in the piece that, like, you know, part of the reason that I am, like, loyal to one airline, that I fly American Airlines, is because I do figure that if you get to be a certain status, that they're less likely to, like, hassle you, you know? And so, like, I don't see it as privilege as much as like buying protection. Like, you could probably get a cheaper flight on whatever, you know, whatever the website is. But if you just stick with one airline as much as you can, they're probably not going to throw you off if you're a gold status card holder or whatever. So anyway, check it out. A lot of my net neutrality. I picked this time to talk about net neutrality and airlines. A lot of cross, counter programming that is being overcome by James Comey. Bill Scherer, what have you been working on lately?
Well, so Real Clear Politics, that piece on the highly tolerant Trump voters, and should be coming out soon. I don't know exactly when. I have a sweeping overview of the Democratic 2020 field that I think Politico is going to run soon. So keep an eye out for that.
Oh, that's nice. I saw that The Hill had like 24 people who were going to run for. They did like a listicle or something. Is this your listicle, or how's this going
to? I don't want to give away my approach to this. Because it's not going to be like any 2020 piece you've seen.
Awesome, man. All right. Well, another. Let's be honest. This was a less than a less. This is like on the lower end of the Matt Bill spectrum. But I've been gone for 2 weeks.
Then you've been hard on yourself. You're in a funk because Trump's not Reaganing anymore. But don't feel like this has harmed your performance on the show.
Well, I am in a funk for reasons we won't discuss here. But I would say that this show is like pizza, that even when it's bad, it's still amazingly good and almost better than anything else. So that's how good we are. Even
right.
when we have even right. an off day is better than 99% of what you're going to get out there. All right.
Till next week.
All right. Thanks, Bill. See
Take
you guys.
Care.
Thanks for listening to Blogging Heads TV. You can help support this content by remembering to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can subscribe to all Blogging Heads episodes or to a specific program by going to our subscribe page at bloggingheads.tv/subscribe. There you can sign up for podcast downloads via iTunes or Stitcher, or you can subscribe to our email and we'll send you an alert every time we post a new episode.